Give me the Bible. We just sang that. And that is the foundation of what we're doing here tonight. There may be those in our audience who have not been part of one of our forums, so let me take just a moment or two to explain. Sometimes you hear a man preach something and you have a question about it, or you'd like to make a comment about it, but obviously you can't do that in the regular assembly. And so some years ago, the elders decided to occasionally offer this format where after something was preached in the morning lesson that there may be questions about, where people could submit those questions and they'd be dealt with in the evening setting like we're doing now. So if you have questions or comments tonight, raise your hand. We'll be glad to entertain those questions or comments and address them. This is a productive way to address these issues because we do believe the Bible is the authority and not the preacher. Because I preach it doesn't make it true. I do not speak for the church here. I do not speak for the elders here. I simply present what I believe the Bible to teach. Furthermore, if the elders are agreed, that's still not the orthodox position that the members of this congregation have to hold. We're interested in truth. We're encouraged to examine the Scriptures to see if the things being said were so. We know that in the Jerusalem church, Acts chapter 15, that there was a discussion where even those who differed with the apostles and prophets were allowed to speak. This was in a search for truth, and that's what we're doing this evening. So, in the course of our forum tonight, I'm going to begin by addressing some of the questions that were submitted to me this afternoon. And then, if there are others that you wish to submit, we'll certainly consider those. You may have to be satisfied with the I don't know, but we'll do what we can with them. And then, as time allows, I've got a number of questions from times past in discussing this that have been raised, and we can look at those as time will allow. I want to begin by reading an email that Alex sent me. Only reason I want to read this is to show the appropriateness of what we're doing in studying these topics. He said this was given to him by a friend that he didn't tell me who, not important. But he said, this friend of his said, I take the Scripture pretty much for what they say about elders and deacons. When I was an elder, my children became disobedient as teenagers, and I resigned my eldership. I still feel that it was the right thing to do. I no longer desire either office, and in fact believe that I was probably not a good fit for either job, but there was little choice at the time as the church was small and few were willing to step up to do the job. At the time, I thought I was doing an okay job, but in reflection, I now think I really didn't do the job justice, unquote. If you look at your Bibles in 1 Timothy chapter 3, and in Titus chapter 1, when Paul wrote to these preachers, Timothy and Titus, instructing them to teach on the subject of elders, he said in verse 2, an overseer then must be. He did not say a bishop maybe can meet these qualifications or might think about some of these. He must be. Same thing in Titus chapter 1:6. If a man is or be. And we've observed in our studies that little word be, the to-be verb, and so the things that are following it qualify the man. They're character qualifications. It's interesting that whoever this individual is, I don't know if he even thought he was qualified when he agreed to serve.
And T.A. was telling me before we met this evening about a man he knew that really didn't want to serve, but they asked him to serve, and I guess he thought maybe he had to have elders, so he agreed to serve. And so again, when you read this statement in 1 Timothy 3, even before the statement I read, it says an elder, if a man aspires to or desires, it's a noble task that he desires to do. It's something he wants to do in service to the master. So you wonder about a fellow who defaults to that position. There's just nobody else to do it. I don't know if I'm qualified, but I'll do it. I don't know what kind of work that man's going to do in the first place. But nevertheless, that kind of situation that evidently exists in churches raises the issue that we're looking at, who is indeed qualified to serve in this capacity. Now, while we've dealt in past lessons with some of these qualifications, this morning's lesson was really focusing on verse 4 and 5 of 1 Timothy 3 and verse 6 of Titus 1. He must be one who manages his own household well, keeping his children under control with all dignity. But if a man does not know how to manage his own household, how will he take care of the church of God? And then Titus 1:6, he must be having faithful children, or having children who believe, depending on what version you read, not accused of dissipation or rebellion. And so we discussed that question in our study this morning as it pertains to the question of, must an elder have more than one child? We looked at the plural term children and studied some verses that indicated that children, both in our language and in the Bible, is used in an indefinite way, that is, one or more, and then looked at the context and harmony to see what we could learn about that. And I'm of the persuasion it's one or more. And then, must the elder's children be Christians? That depends on how you translate that phrase. And again, based on the context and harmonizing 1 Timothy 3, I prefer the having faithful children, not children who are believing, but children who can be believed in because they are trustworthy. And then the third thing is, must he have living, faithful children? Must they be faithful 20 years later once he's appointed? What if the children die? And we looked at that little phrase, having faithful children, tried to show that there's evidence that that is a phrase that it's a participle, and it's not talking about the action going on right now, but it identifies the character of the man. He's a having faithful children kind of man. Well, anyway, that's a brief review if you weren't here for the morning lesson of what we did. And I'm going to now look at some of the questions that were submitted as a result of our studies. So if you have your Bibles open at 1 Timothy chapter 3, this is a very good question that was submitted. It's after the lesson this morning. And I was asked, if you're looking at the children to measure the character of the man, I suggested in our study the only reason you're looking at the children at all is to see something about the kind of man he is, and I believe that to be the case. The question is raised, well, how does that apply to verse 11? The wife. And again, that depends on what version you may be using. If you're using the New American Standard, it just says women. It doesn't say wife. You're aware, I believe this audience is aware of the fact that the word translated woman or wife is the same word. Whether it's translated wife or woman is a translator's decision. In fact, if you're using the New American Standard version, there's a little one by the word woman. There's a marginal note that you will see out in the margin says either deacons' wives or deaconesses. In other words, it can be wives, or it can refer to women, not the wives of anybody, just special servants like the men are special servants. So is this actually referring to elders' wives and deacons' wives, or is this referring simply to another special role in the congregation that women occupy? That is a totally different study, and we're not going to get into that tonight. But, so we're going to take it as if it is talking about the wife of deacons or elders. Somebody said, well, it follows the idea of deacons, but the question, the person that raised the question this morning pointed to the word also in verse 10 and suggests that whatever said in verse 11 would apply both to the elders and the deacons. Here's my response to that, for whatever it's worth. When you look at verse 4, same context now, and he talks about the children. The reason you're looking at the children, they have anything to do with the measure of the man, is because they are under his rule. They're under his control. He has influence in who they are and how they live. Note it says, he must manage his own household well, keeping his children under control with all dignity. The man does have control in his home. If he doesn't, first of all, he's simply failing as a father. And he certainly, if he can't control his family with honor and dignity without threats and shoutings and those kinds of things, he's certainly not qualified, he says in verse 5, to take care of the church of God so that it'll be a pillar and ground of the truth, verse 15. And so the children are definitely tied to his ability to rule. Verse 11, I do not see any connection to the man and his ability to rule his wife or influence his wife to be this kind of woman. It just says women must likewise be. So if you take this to be the wives of elders, then this is a qualification that must be met. But it's not in his domain to make her dignified, not malicious, gossip, temperate, and faithful. He doesn't rule her like he rules his children. You cannot blame him if she's not that, and you cannot commend him if she is that. She's a grown adult. Who she is and how she conducts herself is totally under her control. She's responsible for that. And it seems to me, unless my thinking is cloudy or off base, that is the difference in looking at the children, because they do say something about the man's ability to rule. Looking at the wife does not do that. Any follow-up or questions or comments about that? No one? Do I take that as you agree, or you just say, I don't know what he was talking about? Okay, so don't feel bad if you have a question or comment. I'm not telling you have to agree with me. I'm just trying to deal with the question. Okay, so that was one, and that's a very good question that was raised. Here's another question that was raised. If a man gives every evidence of being powerfully gifted by God to shepherd a congregation, and he could not sire a baby, and the adoption agencies failed him, is he unqualified to be one of the elders? Before I answer this question, you men who want to be elders someday, you may face these questions. Are you ready to deal with them? Get ready. You may be dealing with these very questions. How would you deal with these questions? And thus the need to study and think and deal with Scripture. But nevertheless, we just come back to the text. 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 10. Who's to decide who's qualified? The members of the church are. They're to test the man. These also be tested, just like the elders are tested, the deacons are tested. And while we didn't spend a lot of time in it, in our recent lessons, there's abundant evidence that the representatives of God's people, God has his people to choose. That was clear in Acts 6, wasn't it? It's clear the collection that was taken to the Jerusalem saints, the churches chose the messengers that would carry their money. Even in the Old Testament, under the time of Moses, when Jethro suggested he get some assistance, Moses told the people to select men that met these certain qualifications. And so it's the congregation's job to select the men. That's the importance of these studies. It's not the elder's job to pick out the guys who will serve as elders. Do elders have any say in that? As members, certainly. And hopefully to take some degree of leadership, which we're trying to do. But it's the congregation's job to test these men. Okay. Now, verse 4 has a qualification. You're in the congregation. You're sitting on the pew. Or you're at home contemplating who might serve. If a man has no children, even though he may have wanted them, either naturally or by adoption, but he has no children, how do you test a fellow so far as that qualification? I don't know how you will. I don't know how you can do it. If I'm missing something, you speak up, and I don't know how you can do it. And so it would look like to me, if it's your job to test a fella whether he can take care of the church of God, verse 5, and one of the measures of that is his ability to rule his family in dignity, but he has no children. It looks to me like it would leave you without that standard of measure in determining that qualification. Anybody have a comment or question, follow up on that?
Good.
Sir?
It seems like a slippery slope to open up that type of thinking anyway, because he hasn't proven himself. What's to say that my thought on his exceptional ability is other people in the church have me? Does it mean that my thoughts are standard and could be different amongst everybody else?
Okay. All right, so Keith just brought up the fact it may be a slippery slope and that each person's opinion then becomes a standard becomes a judgment without any measure or standard. Okay. Here's another question that was raised, and I do not know the answer to this one, but it's not a critical question. It's just an interesting question. Why is it that our elders at Humble, current and in the past, have all had believing children who have served? Well, actually, what is meant by that, our elders current in the past who have served had believing children. Why is it all the elders who served here in the church at Humble has had believing children? I don't know. I guess they did a good job of teaching their children. Does that fact mean that's the scriptural requirement? No, it doesn't. It's an interesting observation, and I guess that's correct. I hadn't even stopped to think about it. But the only way that's a scriptural requirement is what would make that being, that is having these believing children, a scriptural requirement. What? Where in the book? You're right. I'm looking for a specific place. A lot of people believe that. Do they just pull it out of the air? Y'all not get your nap out?
Place.
Oh, my question is fuzzy.
Yes.
You mean specific places?
You've been talking to members here, haven't you, Mark?
Just a lucky guess. you should probably be encouraged with it in the guidance for New Testament behavior and more specifically in the context of all faith and growth.
Yeah, where would they get that?
Titus 1:6.
Thank you. Having believing children. Or if you're reading the ESV, who are believers. What's wrong with the ESV translation?
The verb.
They translated the verb, and it's not a verb. It's an adjective and a noun. Right. Compare translations when you study. Okay, so that's where it comes from, Titus 1:6. So it depends on what you think about what that text means, whether or not they have to have believing children. Okay? Any follow-up questions about that question or comment? All right. Are there any new questions before I address some of the questions and comments that have been raised on this very subject in the past? Yes, Sam? Everybody hear the question?
They look at you as children and judging on if they are able to.
Okay, the question is, would this favor the translation in Titus 1:6 having believing children? In fact, in view of the fact in Titus, he says that an elder must be able to teach. How would you respond to that?
No.
Just no? There you are, Sam. That's the end of that one. All right. Good. Was Jesus able to teach?
Yes.
Did he convert everybody he taught?
No.
Did he convert most of the people he taught?
No.
He had a pretty low percentage rate, didn't he? Did that reflect on his ability to teach?
No.
No. What did Paul say about the teacher and the result? God gives the increase. I plant, Apollos watered, God gives the increase. So let's suppose his children do not obey the gospel. Does that necessarily reflect on his ability to teach? It may, but not necessarily so. Now, here's the second thing to observe. You said parallel the two. Is able to teach in 1 Timothy 3, look at your two passages if you have them open. In 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 2, you have that qualification, able to teach. Okay? Is that parallel, faithful children or children who believe in Titus 1:6, or is there something else in 1 Timothy 3 that parallels it? Huh? Verse 4 parallels Titus 1:6. Has to do with his ability to rule his children. What is there in Titus 1 that parallels able to teach? Verse 9. Holding fast the faithful word which is in accordance with the teaching, so that he be able both to exhort in sound doctrine and to refute those who contradict. Is that able to teach his children? Not there, is it? So, that's a good question that Sam has. Personally, I do not think that his ability to teach is necessarily measured by whether or not his children obeyed the gospel. If he has 5 children and 2 obeyed the gospel and 3 didn't, do you measure his ability as a 40% rate? How do you measure that? And so, let's suppose he wasn't even a Christian when his children became Christians. Is that possible? Where's an example? Timothy. So now Timothy became a Christian. Does that say anything about his father's ability to teach?
No.
No. Let me ask you this. Is it possible, though, if this is having faithful children, that he could have met that qualification before he was a Christian? Yes. And you may have an example of that. I can't be dogmatic about it. In Acts 14, in the first preaching journey, because they came right back through those churches and appointed elders in every city. Somebody had a comment. Yes, Betty? You're sure they would have been faithful? You say if he'd had children, you're sure they would have been faithful? Well, he had 12. He taught intently for 3 years. Did all of them make it? Look at Isaiah chapter 1. Look at verse 2. What is the analogy between God and Israel there? Father, children. How well did God do?
Not very well, but they led by their obedience.
Yes. Stubborn and rebellious. I don't know, Betty. Maybe you're right, but I do not... I cannot equate a rebellious child necessarily with a father's failure. I certainly cannot say that if a father teaches right, his children will be Christians or do right. What is one fundamental concept that argues against that? We talked about it in the lesson this morning. Free moral agency. I don't care how much you teach, that child is a free moral agent to reject what they have been taught. Right. Good comment. Somebody else. Yes, David? You're going to have to speak up now. You know who you're talking to. I raised that very point this morning. If you had a man who had 5 children, none of them obeyed the gospel, I might raise Sam's question. Not the verse 4 and 5, not his ability to rule, but the question of, is he able to teach? I might. I don't know that it would prove that, but yes, that would be a legitimate, in my thinking, a question that would be raised, yes. And if he had 5 children, let me ask you this. If he had 5 children, let's say you don't believe he's talking about Christians, and 3 were Christians, let's say you're not talking about Christians. 3 were trustworthy children and 2 were not. Would he be qualified? No? He doesn't have faithful children? Huh?
They're not trustworthy.
3 of them?
Said 2 aren't.
2 aren't. Does he have faithful children? If you got 3 boys and 2 girls, that wouldn't be a good parallel. But would you say, if somebody says, does that man have faithful children? Would you answer no? Would that be fair? No, that would be fair. So you say, well, how many? Well, that's where, guess who's got to decide that?
Congregation.
You do. Congregation's got to decide that. Why are you even looking at the kids? You're looking at the children to tell you what they say about the man. That's why. Not number. It's not number. It's what do they say about the man. They may say nothing about him. whatever good in the children may be the influence of his wife. How many, well, let me ask this. Did Samuel have faithful children? They're pretty rotten. Samuel's fault? Maybe, you said? Well, I'm asking about Samuel. I'm not asking about Eli. The fact is, we don't know, as Keith has pointed out. But all we know about Samuel, the answer would be no. One thing for sure, I'd be in a poor position to render judgment on Samuel because of the character of his two boys, wouldn't I? From what I know about Samuel. So, we've got to be very careful about this faithful children thing. What is characteristic about his two boys that further alleviates that casting a shadow on Samuel? They were grown men, weren't they? Okay. And then Linda brought up Eli. Now, she said Eli was to blame for his boys. How do you know that? That's when they were grown men, right? What about when they were boys? What did he do with them when they were boys? I don't know either. So I don't know how you'd blame him for that. Maybe he is at fault. God said he did rebuke the boys when they were grown men. How could he have done it? He's just an old guy. What could he have done to his boys? He was a judge. He could have done something about it. But you know, that's my boys. That's the way we think, you know. All right. So, good comment. All right. Any other follow-up on that? All right. Here's a good question that was raised in the past, and I want to deal with that. I've got notes here on it, if I can find them. Here it is. This is a good question. In our discussion this morning, we talked about the word children can be used of one or more. So the question was raised in the past, well, what about the term elders then? I always preach that a local church must have more than one elder. Elders. What if somebody says, wait a minute, preacher, you said the plural children can be one or more. Why can't the term elders be one or more? That's a good question. Can the term elders refer to one or more? Turn to Leviticus chapter 4 and verse 15. Is that elders two or more, or can that be elders one or more? It is? How do you know that? How many hands do you have? If one elder lays his hands, could I say an elder laid his hands, plural, on something? I don't see anything here about two or more elders, personally. One or more. How many hands do you have? But if you're saying one or more, wouldn't there fit?
No, because you just said his hand.
If you say an elder must have faithful children, they must be respectful. Is they singular or plural? So he can't, so children can't be one or more then, right? There will fit one or more. All right, let's go to another passage. Deuteronomy 32:7. So it says, remember the days of old, consider the years of all generation, ask your father and he will inform you, your elders, and they will tell you. One or more, or plurality. More than one? You can't ask just one elder then. You can't ask just one? One or more. But it says they. That's right. One or more will fit. They will tell you. Okay. Look at Job 32:9. I'll tell you what, skip that one for sake of time. Go to 1 Timothy 5. That one would be good, but let's go to 1 Timothy 5. The elders, plural word, who rule well are to be considered worthy of double honor. What does double honor mean? Liberal support. What it means. I'll answer my own question. Especially those who work hard at preaching and teaching. Now, go down to verse 20. Those who? Elders. Those, is that kind of like there? Those who continue in sin, rebuke. So, if it's only one elder, you can't rebuke them. Right? One or more. Okay, so one more passage. 1 Peter 5:5. You younger men, likewise, to be subject to your elders. I'm not talking about bishops here, just older men. So if an older man differs with a younger man and maybe has some wise counsel, the younger man can say, I'm not listening to you till you get one more guy with you. Right? Nobody in here believes that, do they? You say, well, all right then, Steve, what are you arguing for, that you can have one elder in a congregation? I am not. How did I reach the conclusion? Well, it's a loaded question, I guess. How did I reach the conclusion that children meant one or more in Titus 1:6? Okay. Well, the rules of our language show it can mean one or more, but I came down on the side of that it means one or more. How did I get there? Context and harmony. It's not discussing his ability to procreate, but his ability to rule. And then we looked at some parallel passages in the Bible where it can be that way. Having children can be that. And so if it's his ability to rule, not his ability to procreate. So, with the term elders, you have Acts 14:23. As they went back through the churches, they appointed elders, plural, in every church, singular. In Titus 1:5, it's to appoint elders in every city, whole for part, the church in the city. In other words, elders in every city. And then in Acts 15, you had elders in the church at Jerusalem. In Acts 20, you had elders in the church at Ephesus. In Philippians 1, you had elders in the church at Philippi. There's not only just happens to be examples of elders in every church. You have the apostles appointing elders in every church. In every church. And so it seems to me to be a consistent thing that there was always a plurality of elders in every local congregation. So without any further evidence to point to one or more, I have to stay with the plural in that case. I believe there's evidence to point that children refers to one or more in Titus 1:6. Okay? Our time is up. Thank you for your comments and questions and for your good attitude. If you have further questions, you can certainly submit them and hope that sometime I'll get around to answering them, but you certainly can feel free to ask those questions.